Welcome, everyone, to episode 467 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. We are less than 2 weeks away from the start of the 2021-22 NBA regular season. We have a ton of news to talk about today. We're going to hit Kyrie and what the Nets are going to do about him. He has still yet to get vaccinated, and that means he's starting to miss preseason games. We'll also talk about Andrew Wiggins and his decision to get vaccinated. We will talk about DeAndre Ayton, who is so far unsuccessfully negotiating an extension with the Phoenix Suns. And of course, we'll hit on the latest in the endless circle of Ben Simmons trade saga. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is the Supreme Bay of our podcast, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
I was arrested, apparently.
Yeah. It's been a rough week for you trying to defraud the NBA.
I mean, can we just take a moment and appreciate how that in the police report there's an AKA?
It's so good, man. Who called him that?
When I saw there was an AKA, I saw the name, I was like, who? And I saw it was attached to Chris Douglas Roberts. I'm like, that's not his nickname. That's CDR.
Right. Right. I mean, my college roommate was from Memphis, was a huge Memphis fan. That was the time of CDR in college. So, like, I am very well acquainted with Chris Douglas Roberts from that time.
Yeah.
I never heard that nickname before this police report came out. And I texted him immediately. I was like, what is this?
Maybe it's his a new nickname from his recent criminal past.
Yeah, I guess so. It's certainly a choice, but thoughts with the 18 members or 18 former NBA players who tried to defraud the NBA's health insurance. Good job, guys. Maybe collaborate a little better next time. Like, maybe not. Let's not submit the same exact reports for the same exact dates. Like, just
or if you earn what was it, $161 million collectively? No, it was actually more. I think
it was like $300 million or something.
Was
like
it 300? Okay,
I think so.
Yeah, then maybe just not spend it all.
Yeah, this is. I don't think this is going to be the plot of Ocean's 18.
Right.
All right. We have a lot to discuss, Mort. Yep. We talked about this a couple weeks ago in the Atlantic Division pod, and we're hedging here because we were like, we don't want to be hot takey, but what if Kyrie Irving does not get the vaccine? And you know, New York has this rule where you cannot play in home games, New York City, you cannot play in home games unless you have received one shot of a COVID vaccine, whether that's right. You could just get fully vaccinated with J&J, or you could just get the first shot of Pfizer and Moderna. So far, Kyrie has not done that. He was ineligible to play, recording this on Friday, so he's ineligible to play in their first preseason game at home tonight. He is going to forfeit roughly like a little less than $400,000 for every game that he misses. And Adrian Wojnarowski and Brian Windhorst of ESPN reported on Tuesday that they remain unclear on his ultimate intentions to get vaccinated and have made no decision on whether to accommodate him as a part-time player this season. There had been previous optimism that Kyrie would get vaccinated, but, quote, that hope is waning, and Irving's continued resistance to vaccination has the Nets preparing for the possibility that they'll be without him for home practices and games for the foreseeable future. So that's a lot.
It's a lot, and it also means that what you were saying, like it might be a hot take, might not be much of a hot take, Brian.
Right. So if you're the Nets, what do you do here? Knowing that you're going into the season, you know, we've been saying it all offseason, the Nets are the clear favorite to win the championship this year. Like betting.
Well, you said that. I disagree with that, but okay, go ahead.
Well, like FanDuel Sportsbook has them as a +210. The Lakers are +450. You know, like and FanDuel is not the only one. Like all odds makers across the board have installed the Nets as the clear title favorites.
Yeah, the odds makers' favorites. My favorites are different.
But that's assuming that they have all three of their big three.
Right. Yes.
Which sounds like it, you know, as of right now, I mean, there's still time for this to change, but as of right now, they do not. So if you're Brooklyn, how do you approach this situation?
Man, it's like, it's really difficult. We could sit here and crack jokes and whatnot, but like, I actually want to try to have a very productive discussion out of this.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to communication, right? I mean, you need to have, or at least you need to try to have conversations with Kyrie basically as many as you can, where you really lay things out for him. And like, you bring in doctors, maybe you bring in people who are much more aware about these things than he is, or that we, you know, you and I are. You know, I know that you're very smart about this because obviously your wife is a doctor who works with these things. So, but my point is, you know, all the NBA players who refuse to get vaccinated, they need to listen to doctors. And I realize that that's also a challenge in and of itself, because some of them be saying like, no, they're just going off a script. No, you need to introduce different people to these guys. I mean, I'm not just talking about Kyrie, but whoever is not vaccinated in the NBA, mm-hmm. and really make sure that they have the right information instead of that whole doing your own research thing. Because we've brought that up before. I made a joke about it, and I stand by it, because like, what is your own research? Is that reading things while you're on the crapper? I don't know.
That's, and I'm
not even kidding when I say this right now. Like, I would actually be interested in hearing what NBA players who make that argument, like, what is it? What is the kind of research they look for? Like,
yeah.
If they keep making that argument, I would like to know, okay, what is that research? Show me. Like, go to some blog site and create a one-time profile and then lay out all your research. I would love right. that. And then, okay, cool. Then we have something. But everything is just, nah. Doing my own research, not going to elaborate. It's private.
Right. Or, yeah, it's a personal decision.
You're right, it's a personal decision. And I just think at some point, something's got to give here. And I think, yeah. I can't blame the Nets for saying, you know what, then we just can't trust your availability this year. We just right. can't. I mean, and in the meantime, while you decide to play these cards, we are going to play our cards, which means we are going to save on your salary in the meantime. We're not going to pay you that money. But it's tough, right? I mean, it's one of those things where if you try to force it upon him, it's going to create a counter movement. Then the NBA is going to be flooded with criticism from all sides in some capacity for weeks and weeks and weeks. So I'm sure the NBA and the Nets wants to have, vaccines mandatory in all capacity, like almost forced upon players, but you can't go down that road necessarily. So it's super difficult, Brian. It's such a multi-layered conversation, and that's really what this needs to happen for the Nets and Kyrie. Multi-layered conversation. It has to be a conversation. And while I said that they had to bring in doctors, sure, but they also need to listen to him, because otherwise he won't feel listened to. And mm-hmm. if you kind of just say, no, Kyrie, you're wrong. And of course he is. Like, you and I, we agree he is wrong. That's not a discussion, but you need to basically let him speak so you kind of know what you're up against. And you can, okay, if these are the concerns you have, these specific concerns that you have, let's bring in experts who can, like, one by one, break down why your theories aren't really the right conclusion.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're, like, kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place right yeah. now. Because, I mean, one, even if they were, like, let's say Kyrie goes to them and says, no matter what, I'm not getting vaccinated. Like, yeah. if I don't get the religious exception or I don't get a medical exception, it's just not going to happen. You know, if this law stays in place all year, you are not going to have me from home games, and that includes the playoffs.
Yeah.
So you'll have me for, you know, half the games in the regular season and then half the games in the playoffs, or maybe not even. Like, if they get home court advantage throughout, as we expect that they will at least for the first round or two, that's, you know, four of the seven games of the series, they will not have him.
Yeah.
In that case, the logical thing would be, okay, well, we have to at least consider entertaining the idea of trading him. But he only has 1 year left on his contract. He has a player option next year that he could decline. He's, you know, clearly very tight with Kevin Durant, and I think Kevin Durant would put his foot down and say, no, you're absolutely not trading this guy. And you have to ask the question, like, Kyrie in a vacuum is worth a ton on the trade market. But given all of these other factors and given the threat, I mean, we've heard leaks already that if he gets traded, he would just retire. And that sounds, you know, just like an empty threat that most players would make. Like, but with Kyrie, I don't know that it is. I could genuinely see him just saying, no, I'm not going to show up. I'll forfeit my salary. I don't care.
And so, the trade value isn't great, Brian.
Right. Like, I mean, you know, Ben Simmons for Kyrie Irving has come up more and more as of late. And I get it as a, you know, result, like just swap one problem for another. But I don't see why the Sixers say yes to that.
Right.
Like, I would much rather just sell Ben Simmons for 30 cents on, like, take the Malcolm Brogdon in a pick package, because you at least know Malcolm Brogdon's going to show up to the team.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what's really tricky here for the Nets, is even if you wanted to trade Kyrie, I don't think Kevin Durant would allow it, and I don't think you're getting much, if anything, of value in return, given all of the uncertainty around him. Like, teams aren't going to, you know, give up three picks and three pick swaps and their best young prospect, and that shouldn't even appeal to Brooklyn anyway in this win-now window.
Right.
Like, you know, you're not – like, I don't think – would Indiana do just Malcolm Brogdon for Kyrie Irving straight up?
Honestly, no, because of the threat in him not playing at all. Then you're giving up Brogdon for nothing. What does that help you? Like, Indiana is not in a place where they're trying to rebuild and tank. So no, I don't think so. And that, like, who was it who reported that his trade value, Kyrie's that is, was near zero? I don't remember who said that.
That was Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated,
yeah,
if I remember correct. And I remember at the time, a lot of people got very mad about that, saying, like, well, Kyrie Irving's like a top 20 player. How could that be? And it's not, again, it's not Kyrie Irving's trade value as a basketball player.
Yeah, right.
It is Kyrie's trade value with all of this other stuff going on.
Yeah. It's difficult because Kyrie, as we've discussed so many times, is just immensely talented, like immensely, immensely talented. And I also think it's important, while we have him up as a subject, that he does do good things in the community. I don't want to vilify him in it entirely. I do think what he's doing right now with the vaccine issue is hurtful. And I think it is dangerous because he's setting a bad precedent for something that shouldn't, that's something that should be obvious, that vaccines are good. But I mean, it's just, again, I come back to this term, multi-layered. This isn't an open and shut case. This isn't clear cut. There's no easy solution here. Everything comes with so many degrees of layers to Kyrie. And it did, even before the coronavirus thing. Also, I mean, this is a very complicated individual. And you should never apologize for being complicated. I don't think that's on him. I think people are who they are. That's fine. But I also have to say that I think he needs to acknowledge that he does have a public platform. He is an NBA player who is contractually obligated to play. So you need to find out what's right for you. If Kyrie says, look, this isn't for me, I don't want to play to the NBA's fiddle, I'm going to retire or leave the game or whatever he wants to do, whatever floats his boat, fine. I'll respect that if that's his choice. But I think we have to also just lay it out there. And I understand we're in the player entitlement, not player empowerment, I'm saying entitlement. They're two very different things. My apologies. Player empowerment era. But that doesn't mean we can just say, well, you know what? Let's sign guys to max contracts and they don't have to play.
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, you're getting paid to play. Like, it's the Ben Simmons thing again. Like, it seems now players are trying to leverage, you know, their all-star games or whatnot to basically say, yeah, give me all the money in the world, and then I'll play when I damn well want to. Mm-hmm. That's an issue, I think.
Yeah, and so I'm with you in the extent that if Kyrie does not want to get vaccinated, like, I don't agree with that decision. We'll talk about that when we hit on Wiggins in a minute, but it's his decision, but his decision has consequences. And that's that's where we need to be clear here. Like, the Nets are not in the wrong. You know, there was some talk of like, well, will the Nets move their practices out of New York City to accommodate Kyrie? And the Nets said no, because that's not on us. This is not our choice. Like, we are just abiding by the city mandate.
Yeah.
But if Kyrie wants to comply, he can. If not, he's not going to be a part of this team to the extent that he needs to be. And that is the choice that he's making. And I can see, you know, I could see that Nets fans and Warriors fans and now LA fans as well, because LA just implemented a similar thing, you know, saying, well, this isn't fair that our teams are subject to this and the other now 25 teams in the NBA aren't. And I hear that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also hope the other 25 or the other cities where the other 25 NBA teams are do implement a similar mandate. So that we're all playing under the same, you know, that this is the logical thing to do at this point. Like, this is where we are headed. You know, this is not a new idea of having a vaccine mandate. Like, you can't go to school in the US if you don't have certain vaccines. Like, you can't show up in elementary school if you're not immunized against certain diseases. We're getting to the point now with COVID where these things have been out for a year, or like the vaccines have been available for close to a year now. Like, it's only going to move further in this direction. So I don't blame Brooklyn here for how they're handling things. It's just, I mean, this is such a fascinating subplot to this season, because if you remove Kyrie, like, the Nets are still going to be good either way.
Yes. You
know, even if Kyrie does not play this season or only plays in road games, whatever the case may be, I still have the Nets as a top two seed in the East. But I don't have them as a clear favorite anymore. I don't even have them the favorite to come out of the East at that point.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also, Brian, you brought up like KD before. Like, right now, KD is having his friends back, which, okay. Is that going to be the same situation when you're entering March or April?
Yeah.
And KD is like, I want another ring. And my best friend, who is healthy to play, by the way, isn't suiting up alongside me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, Bri. I mean, of course, I said March and April, you can't trade Kyrie at that point. But my point is, like, is he going to stay as loyal in that regard? Because at the end of the day, the NBA is a results-driven league. You're in it to win it. So what's the end game here? Is it all about just teaming up so you can be close to your friends?
It's a fair question. And it's a great, you know, I think a number of teams are heading into the season hoping that things fall apart for other teams. And I think now you're looking at Brooklyn, and this is going to be one clear example where, you know, maybe Brooklyn, as you said, they're okay with this conceptually, or like at least moving ahead, like they're willing to deal with this now, but God forbid they got off to a slow start, or KD or Harden gets hurt and their depth gets tested right away. And, you know, again, Kyrie is physically healthy, but just can't play in half of their games. Does that test their patience to the extent that, okay, maybe we are now willing to, I mean, hell, maybe they are willing to just trade him for, you know, whatever they can get for him.
I think the Nets are open to that right now, but like you said, they're not entertaining it publicly because the KD factor.
Yeah.
So I guess this leads into me asking the tough question. I know KD just signed a long-term contract extension and all that, but should they care? I mean, should the Nets stand their ground and just say, look, we love you, Kevin, we really do, but we can't have you, a single player, dictate the entire course of our season. Like, we've gone through hell since 2013 when the prior regime made a dumbass trade. Like, we have gone through hell. Now we're here. We clawed and scratched our way back up to relevance. And then one of our stars is just basically not deciding not to play. I mean, how much power can one guy leverage here in terms of KD? Like, right? If he says, no, I don't want Kyrie traded. At what point does that NBA organization go in and say, no, shut up. We are going to do what's best for us. If you have a problem with that, we'll trade you too.
Yeah, well, he especially has no leverage because he signed that extension. Had he not, and had all these guys been up for new deals after this year, then you do have more power. Like, if you threaten, I'm walking if you trade Kyrie.
Yeah.
Then okay, Brooklyn can't trade Kyrie regardless. But
right,
as you said, he just signed a long term deal. Like, maybe he tries the Ben Simmons thing. Like, I just signed a long term deal, and now I'm gonna sit out and demand a trade. But otherwise, he doesn't really have a ton of power, other than you don't want to piss off your best player.
But that's, again, that's the thing, right? I think we're coming, you know, I think we're seeing something form here. I think now it seems some players are coming more to a head than we've seen before. Mm-hmm. Like, it's with the Sixers and the Ben Simmons situation, that seems to have started something.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if teams are now, okay, look. We want to get back into this thing. Like, there are limits to this madness in terms of, like, if you want to get paid, but you just want to sit on your ass and not play. I mean, that's not going to work out for any of us. So I wouldn't be shocked if teams are, like, trying to push back. I mean, we've already seen that the Sixers are getting a lot of major applause from other NBA teams, albeit silently and not in the open media. About standing firm with Ben Simmons, for example. I wonder if that could be a similar approach in Brooklyn.
So let's move to the other big vaccination news, and hopefully we will just stop having these segments soon.
Yes.
God willing, all these guys, all these holdouts will just get vaccinated, and then we can just not focus on it. That would be ideal. That would
be great, wouldn't it?
Andrew Wiggins was one of the more prominent holdouts. Made it very clear on media day that he did not want to. And, you know, Stephen Curry, like, through gritted teeth, said he supported the decision, but you could read the subtext and it was just like, bro, you're not good enough to do this. Get vaccinated. Yeah. Draymond Green was more publicly supportive and said it's his own decision, but it was, again, actually the San Francisco one is even more restrictive. Like, you have to be fully vaccinated. Whereas New York, you just get one shot. Like, in theory, you could just get one shot of Pfizer or Moderna and not get the second course. You wouldn't be fully vaccinated. You're eligible to play. San Francisco, you have to be fully vaccinated. So Wiggins got the Johnson & Johnson shot because that's the one course, you know, one shot deal. And then you're fully vaccinated after that. Otherwise, he would have had to miss games already. Like, if you had to wait the 3 or 4 weeks between shots. So he is eligible to play. You know, he spoke on Monday about, you know, kind of why he did it and, you know, why he didn't want to. So some of the quotes were, I guess to do certain stuff to work, I guess you don't own your body. That's what it comes down to. If you want to work in society today, then I guess they made the rules of what goes in your body and what you do. Hopefully there's a lot of people out there that are stronger than me and keep fighting, stand for what they believe, and hopefully it works out for them. He also said that he had COVID before and it, quote, wasn't too bad. He said he had an allergic reaction to something a couple of years ago, describing it as a, quote, scary moment that resulted in him now carrying an EpiPen. And then added, I know a lot of people get reactions or injuries from getting the vaccine, so I don't know what it's going to do to me in 10 years. Well, you probably know where I stand on this, but what were your thoughts when all this came out? Dude,
you know where I stand as well. You and I are standing together on this one. This is ridiculous. I hate that we have to talk about this, but I still think it's important because I feel when players or anyone really say something that irresponsible, you need to push back on it. What he's saying is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So, like, what's he out with right now? Was it a knee issue or something? Like, I saw that he picked up an injury, like a physical injury. What, he's gonna blame that on the vaccine as well? Like,
probably.
Right? come on, man. I don't know what it is. It bothers me to a great extent. And to frame it in a way that someone owns your body.
Yeah.
No. Look, regardless of what the public tell you, you still have a choice. You can just decide to play with the consequences of it and say, okay, you know what? I can't be available for home games. I'm going to miss out on, was it $360,000 per game? Per missed game? something along those lines, right? So like, if this meant that much to you instead of the money, you could have done it. Not that don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying, oh yeah, you could do it and I would have respected you for it. I wouldn't. I think what you're doing right now and getting the vaccination is the smart thing. But I don't appreciate the tone afterwards in the, owning my body. No, this isn't it. Like, don't try to turn it into something that it isn't. This is a public global health crisis that you, before you got the vaccine, was a part, you were a part of making that issue worse. Now, after getting the vaccine, you're actually doing something better. Just accept it and move the F along.
Yeah, he is right in one aspect and one aspect alone, where he says, I don't know what the vaccine is going to do to me in 10 years. That's fair. No one does. These are new. We don't know the long-term consequences of the vaccine. That is a fair concern. However, we also don't know the long-term consequences of COVID.
Correct. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop there. Yeah.
We do know that some people have long-term symptoms, like what are called the long haulers with COVID. We do know you can get, even though you've had it before, you can get it again. Even if you're vaccinated, you can get it again. We know that if you're vaccinated, you have a much lower chance of actually getting it, and you have a lower chance of being hospitalized or dying if you do get it. So, you know, Wiggins, again, to some extent is right. Like, given his age and his overall fitness and health, if he gets COVID, more likely than not, he's going to have a mild case. He will be fine. We have seen NBA players where that isn't the case, where Jason Tatum and Evan Fournier and Seth Curry said it really knocked them on their ass. And, Jason Tatum, as of last year, still needed an inhaler after. Yeah. So you would think, just looking at that, feel like, okay, I don't really want to take my chances here. I'll just get the vaccine, which, if we're weighing risk here, the risk of the vaccine versus just getting a bad case of COVID, is one is much worse than the other, and the vaccine is much less risky. But then you also have to approach it, like, this is my fundamental problem when all of these guys say it's a personal decision, because it's not. Like, anything involving public health is not inherently a personal decision.
Right.
It is a decision for the greater good. So if you are unvaccinated and you have a higher chance of catching COVID, then you are putting everyone around you at risk.
Yeah.
And so that's where you have to be willing to say, you know what? I'm nervous about this. That's fine. But look at the hundreds of millions of people that have gotten these vaccines.
Yeah.
There are some adverse side effects. You're going to, more likely than not, if you get it, you're going to feel like garbage for a day, especially after the second shot. That's, you go in knowing that. But you would think the peace of mind, both for yourself and for everyone around you.
Yeah.
Especially, he said he's the only member of his family who's vaccinated. He said it's, quote, not really something we believe in as a family.
Yeah, I remember reading that quote, and that just, I'm rolling my eyes right now, and it's just, I don't think my eyes returned to my sockets for like 2 days after reading that quote, because that's, God, it's just so bad. So that means that the Wiggins's are out there potentially being hurtful. That's not great, Brian.
Or, God forbid, he's going to be traveling a lot this season.
Yeah.
God forbid he picks up a case on the road somewhere or at home, wherever. He can get it anywhere. But, then he comes home and brings it home to his family.
Yeah.
All of whom are unvaccinated. And given how contagious the Delta variant is in particular, if you're in close quarters with those people who are unvaccinated, they are more likely than not going to get COVID as well. And, again, you don't want to wish bad on anyone, but you have to at least imagine the worst case scenario of what if you go out, get COVID, bring it to your family, and then one of, maybe you don't have a bad case, but maybe one of them do.
Yeah. I mean, he has a former teammate who is unfortunately a frighteningly good example of what can happen when things goes wrong. I mean, my heart still breaks for Carl Anthony Towns. I mean, I can't even imagine what he's gone through. And it's just so disrespectful, I think, for people who know him and to basically ignore what he's gone through and realize like, hey, you know what? You lost seven family members. This thing is real. By sitting there saying, no, this thing is not real. Like, this isn't a thing, yada, yada, yada. You are completely slapping him in the face.
Yeah.
And his entire family.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, if you told me at this point last year that, like, that we would have vaccines readily available and they would be as successful as they are, as effective as they are, like 95% efficacy for almost for Moderna and Pfizer. Like that's beyond our wildest imagination at this point last year. And that people would still be refusing to get it. I think I probably would have just ended it right there. I would have like carbon monoxide poisoned myself. It's like, this is the, we've hit it. We've hit the dumbest possible timeline. There's no point going on.
And I just want to say something here. I realize that you people out there have listened to us talk about COVID for half an hour right now. I realize that. And I realize that you're kind of sitting back going, can you talk about basketball? I get it. Trust me, we want to talk about basketball and we'll get there. We will get there. But this is important. This is really, really important. This is something that is also preventing basketball in some cases. And it is very relevant to what is going to happen in the NBA this season. It's also going to be relevant to what the league-wide discourse is. This is going to be relevant potentially in CBA negotiations that are expected to start next year as well. This isn't just a subject that can sort of be ignored for a couple of weeks and then it goes away. This is going to play a factor potentially in how a new collective bargaining agreement is being signed up. This can have huge ramifications for the league moving forward as well. So even if you're out there thinking, well, I just want to, you know, learn about basketball or listen to basketball. Sure. But this is it. This is part of it. I'm sorry. You can't escape it to that extent. These two are interwoven at this point.
Yeah, I mean, as we just discussed, thankfully, Wiggins at least got the vaccine, so he'll be available to his team at all times this year, you know, for that reason, at least.
We should give him credit for that, despite not giving him credit. I don't want to give him credit for what he said afterwards, because that was just dumb. But right. I want to give him credit for also just coming to his senses or whatever. You know, I don't care if he came to his senses or he was just wanted his money. I don't care. He got the vaccine. That's good. That's objectively good. Good.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't want to frame it. I know this framing, someone used it for the NFL. You know, like, you're a bad teammate if you don't get it. But it's also kind of true.
Like, if I don't think really, it's just kind of. It's totally true.
Like, if you're real, especially if you're on the Nets.
Right.
Again, the team that is heavily favored to at least go deep into the playoffs, if not win the title this year. If you're not all, like, doing whatever you can to do your part to make that a reality. I don't know, man.
Could you imagine Paul Millsap? This is the closest maybe that he'll ever get to a championship. Yeah. And he signed off on this and then it just didn't work out because of this. And then he retires.
Blake or Kyrie or
Blake.
LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah. Aldridge. Yeah.
Like all these guys. It's just, All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about actual basketball more, or we'll talk about something that could affect actual basketball, especially moving forward. The Phoenix Suns, we noticed this earlier this year, you know, when all of these max contract extensions for these rookie scale guys were getting announced, like Trey and Luka and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander all happened right away. Michael Porter Jr. got his max deal a week or two ago. Like, there was one glaring absence from this list who we thought was a no-brainer. We thought DeAndre Ayton, coming off of the finals run, as impressive as he was throughout that playoff performance, thought for sure they're going to get this deal done. Woj on Tuesday reports their reluctance to offer him a maximum rookie contract extension has stalled discussions on a deal. He says Ayton has no intention of accepting a deal less than the comparable max contracts from Trey, Luka, SGA, and Michael Porter. He said, sources said the talks between the Suns and the Aiton's representatives have been slowed by ownership's current assertion that Aiton doesn't deserve to be included in that group of players, and a belief by the seven-footer that his performance, his potential, and the marketplace dictate that he does.
Ooh. So, yeah, all right. So, like, I can agree that Aiton isn't on the level of Trey and Luka, at least sure. not right now. That's, like, that's fair, but when you include him with all the rest of the names, then it just becomes even more grotesque. Here's my issue with it. Like, even if you don't think, if you're the Suns, that Aiton is worth a max contract, 29 other teams think that he is, which means, by definition, he is going to be a max contract player, regardless right. of what you think. So the Phoenix Suns, instead of just saying, you know what? We know that he's going to get the max if he hits the market as a restricted free agent. Let's just avoid that and keep the big fella happy and give him that max contract. Decided to say, hey, you know what's a good idea? Let's piss him off. Let's piss him off. And basically say he's not worth what he's getting or what he will be getting from someone, even if it's not us. Like, what are you like? You're gaining nothing from this. Nothing. Yeah. You are what's his name? Cheddar Bob in 8 Mile, who shoots his own dick. Like, that's the Suns in this scenario, and it annoys me because, Brian, we have been harsh on the Suns for at least a couple of years, and then they finally turned it around, and last year was a love fest because they finally figured things out, and now this is how they follow up. This is their reaction. What the hell? Why? I have really tried seeing this from the Sun's side and going, okay, so what kind of benefits could there be in them doing this? Mm-hmm. I'm seeing none, no benefits whatsoever, Brian. So educate me if I'm missing something.
I mean, if they were able to convince him to take less than the max, sure, but
we don't live in fairyland. I mean, it's, right.
It doesn't sound like that's a realistic possibility. So they are bracing for, okay, let's say he becomes a restricted free agent next summer, and on the off right. chance that no one offers him a max, does he take it then? Well, what's stopping him from just signing a shorter term max deal, especially given the factors that we've discussed repeatedly over the last few weeks and months with his new TV deal coming up? It would frankly behoove him to take a shorter term deal that ends after the 24-25 season. Like, the Suns should want, even if you think it's an overpay right now, let's say you think the next, you know, those first 3 years of the contract can be wildly overpaid. Okay. But if you get him on a 5-year, fully guaranteed, no player mm-hmm. option deal, then you're going to have him for those last 2 years. And it's probably going to be a decent, if not good, bargain.
Yeah. You can even remove wildly from the overpaid conversation. I agree with you. I could see a scenario where in the first couple of years he would be overpaid, but it wouldn't be wildly because he's still a game-changing defender. He's a good rebounder. He's highly efficient around the basket. The stat line, throw that away. Throw the stat line away from last year. That was him taking a step back. Like, he scaled his offense back to allow for Chris Paul, Jay Crowder, all those guys. Like, If he got the max right now, I wouldn't flinch. I wouldn't flinch. So it is such a strange decision from the Suns about it. And I don't want to go into whether or not this is Robert Sarver just being cheap or whatnot. Like, I don't know what their motivation is. I don't know. What I do know is that they have grossly miscalculated this situation.
I will say Woj's story alluded to that, which makes me think this came straight from Aiton's agent. His story said, if Sarver doesn't come to an agreement, it will certainly raise questions again about his commitment to constructing a sustainable contender in the Western Conference. He noted that Sarver hasn't played luxury tax since the 2009-10 season. There were long questions about his decision to trade futures all-star guard Joe Johnson in 2005 instead of extending his contract, a move that many believe cost the Suns a championship in the Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire era.
It did. It did. I remember that Suns team. When Joe ended up in Atlanta, I was shocked. Like, yeah, that was supposed to be that team. Like, I'm still upset. I'm not even like a Suns guy. I've never have been, but that team was freaking amazing. Like, it was Steve Nash, it was Joe Johnson, Sean Marion, Amari Stoudemire. Like, that team was loaded, and like Joe probably, because it's, well, actually Stoudemire was coming into his own, so he was probably the third best player, even over Sean to a certain extent, just in terms of half court offense. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there was so much more to him, just in terms of the isolation scoring, the 3-point shooting, the overall game. Like, I'm pissed. I really think that this could be a major, major bump in the road for Aiden and the Suns to have a positive relationship, because it's just, it's such disrespect, though. Like, it's not even, like, you can have the opinion that DeAndre Ayton isn't a max guy, okay, mm-hmm, but, like, you understand that teams are going to disagree with you, thus making him a max guy right away. Like, so your personal feelings are just not valid anymore. As soon as you know that other teams are going to offer him a max, which they will, because he's that young and that good, your personal feelings to the matter, they become irrelevant, and you should just shut the hell up. Like, the Suns opening their mouths here or refusing to give him the max is a dumb, dumb decision.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the way the game is. If you're the number one overall pick and you don't fall flat on your face, you're going to get a max contract coming off of your rookie deal.
Yeah.
It's just, that's, you know, and you, especially with a guy like Ayton, it's not like, this isn't Andrew Wiggins, where, you know, he's plateaued and, like, you have to sit down and talk to him and be like, DeAndre, you promised to get better. Like, do you really? Like, DeAndre Ayton, as you said, his stats went down last year. He went from averaging 18.2 points and 11.5 rebounds the previous season to 14.4 and 10.5 last year. On the surface, that does not sound like a max contract guy. So I hear that argument from Phoenix, but I also call bullshit on it because, as you said, he willingly took a step back.
Yeah.
And for, I mean, we sang his praises all of last year and especially throughout the playoffs. For him to find his niche and find ways to make an impact, despite being number three in the pecking order, was really impressive, especially for a guy with that kind of draft pedigree. And coming off of a run to the finals is not the time to pull this. Like, if the Suns had never acquired Chris Paul, and let's say they just kept missing the playoffs, and said, you know what, we don't know that we're going anywhere with Booker and Ayton as our two cornerstones, we have to choose one or the other. Like, that would have been wrong, but, you know, hypothetically, I could be more sympathetic to this stance. Like, maybe they're entertaining trading him, but you're clearly not. Like, you're running it back, and you're going to have one of the best teams in the Western Conference again this year. And so, like, what's the point of re-signing Chris Paul if you're going to play this card with DeAndre Ayton? And then, you know, moving down, like, Mikal Bridges is also eligible for an extension right between now and October 18th. So they have 10 days to sort all of this out. You know, this is the NBA. Like, once you get really good players and they come up for new deals, you're going to have to pay a lot of money to keep them. But when you have a team that was 2 wins away from a championship, this is the time to pay them. This isn't the Sacramento Kings doubling down on their crappy core. This is a team that was, you know, up 2-0 in the NBA Finals. So I'm with you. I mean, this is it's just such bad timing for Phoenix, and, like, they don't need this coming into the season. Like, I don't want to risk pissing off DeAndre Jordan.
Well, if they don't need it, then don't start it. I mean, this was all their own doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get it. I mean, I do. I understand why they're trying to do what they're doing, but it's not going to work and it's going to backfire, and they should just pony up. Because, like, again, if you sign him to a max deal, someone else, like, if you decide to pivot later, unless he really regresses, which I don't see being the case, especially with Chris Paul there riding his ass, like, someone else would take him. You can always trade him later.
Dallas. Sure.
Dallas, I mean, You think the Warriors wouldn't happily do Wiggins and Wiseman for DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah, for sure. But I'm just saying that's the team that I want him on if this thing is going to blow up. I mean, and I think that would be interesting from Ayton in his agent as well. Like, we keep talking about how Zion could be the first one to take the qualifying offer, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. What about this? What if this provokes Ayton enough to go, you know what? Screw you. I'm taking the QO. And after year five, I'm out of here, baby.
Oof. I would hope, especially since the Suns just had the run that they had.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying I hope for this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I hear you, though. I mean, it's certainly, like, you can't rule anything out at this point.
Yeah.
But he has, other than contentious extension negotiations, he has no reason to want out. Like, being teamed with Devin Booker for the next half decade and with Chris Paul for the next few years, who he raved about this year. You know, hopefully they retain McHale. Like, you still have Jay Crowder for another couple of years. Like, this team is going to be good. It's, you know, you're not on a 20-win piece of crap team that you're trying to get out of right away. But and we saw, you know, John Collins and the Hawks is one example where it seemed like, you know, the Hawks offered him 4 years, $90 million. He turned it down. It seemed like there was some bad blood there. They got over it, had a great season, re-signed him. So just because they're having, you know, even if they don't reach an extension now, that isn't to say they won't next summer. You know, maybe this makes DeAndre Ayton, like, I think the risk you run here, if you don't sign him now, is that he does start to play more selfish or, like, tries to stat pad more. Which maybe that worked. Like, maybe if he's just more effective, that's cool. But, you know, if he starts to run out of the offense and isn't as willing to take a backseat to Devin and Chris this year to the detriment of the team, again, it's a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's too smart to do that, honestly. I think he's very, very bright when it comes to understanding role and all that. And I think he's mature enough to understand that that won't do him any favors as well. But I do wonder what the play here is, because if he sours on Phoenix, they still have matching rights. So if he goes out and gets a max somewhere else, they could still match. And then he would turn right back into the fold.
Right.
So it's like, it's an interesting scenario, or basically a couple scenarios that could come out. I mean, he could ask for a trade. He could tell them, you know, it's not working out. Move me so I can actually get paid. And then I'll play along for the time being, and then we can split amicably or something like that. I don't know, but overall, this is just a bad situation that started by the Suns. And you just, when I saw that report, the first thing I thought was, like, you were doing so well, Suns.
You had one job.
Yeah, like, you're finally doing the right thing, and then you just had to do this, which. And like, people will point out, Suns fans who listen to this podcast will absolutely say, well, this is a negotiation tactic.
Right.
Yeah, but it's a pretty effing dumb one.
Right. It's a negotiation tactic that isn't going to work. It has a high chance of backfiring. Yes.
Yeah, he might actually be very pissed off on this franchise for years. Do you really think that's worth it, even if you do end up saving a couple million? Because I sure as hell don't.
So, speaking of negotiating tactics, Mort, the latest development in the Ben Simmons trade saga came from Kyle Newbeck of Philly Voice earlier this week. So, Kyrie Irving is not the only one who is hemorrhaging money right now. Ben Simmons has now missed two preseason games.
Right.
He is being fined roughly $360,000 for each of those games. So, the Sixers, he was due $8.25 million of his salary on October 1st. They did not pay him that money. They put that in an escrow account and said, we're just going to deduct your fines for missing games from there. So he's already out $720,000. And, well, one can only assume it's going to mount higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle reported that Simmons' representation spoke with the Players Association, and they reiterated he will be unable to recoup that money. You know, there was some thought of, like, when he gets traded, maybe some team can waive the fines. No, he is out $720,000 already, and those fines are only going to continue mounting. It was also apparently communicated to the Sixers that the early fines were perhaps higher than they expected because there was some, the TLDR version is because of the new health and safety protocols that were negotiated, you're fined, you know, like a 191th percentile of, or percentage of your salary, right, instead of it was supposed to be like 1/142nd. So he is actually losing. He was only supposed to lose like 220,000. Now he's losing 360. So it is, it is more substantial than they thought. the more entertaining part for me, more, you know, at this point, I'm enjoying the mounting excuses as to why he wants out. First,
yes, we are DMing very, very frequently. I am very well aware of that, Brian.
Yeah. So it was like, first it was the Doc and Embiid comments after game 7. Then there were a couple of reports. It was like Sam Amick and Kevin O'Connor about the fit issues that apparently just started bothering him within the last 2 months that haven't existed before that. Kyle's report. So the source familiar with the conversations between Simmons' camp and the Sixers told Philly Voice that the only consistent or clear message this offseason was about the accelerated timeline Simmons has been evaluated on compared to other number one overall picks. In most instances, agent Rich Paul and others have pointed out, top picks are sent to bad teams where they can figure out who they are and how their career is going to play out. Having missed his first year out of LSU due to injury, Simmons joined Embiid to form a partnership capable of winning 50 games right away. And the Sixers have been contenders, or at least pseudo-contenders, at various points during the last three seasons, increasing scrutiny on his development. What did you think of that, Mort?
Oh, that's something that comes out of a horse's butt.
It's the best one yet. I would rather just play the anti-vax card, honestly. That'd be less embarrassing.
No, it's horrible. It's really like you're basically saying, "Oh, you made it to too good a team."
Yeah.
But what really gets me though is that this excuse I want to call it, is just something you're making for a currently 25-year-old human being. Like, he's not 21 anymore. You can't play that card now. Like, it's too late. He's in his prime. This is, he has just completed effectively, because he didn't play his first year though, but still his fifth year in the league, like fourth active, but five overall. Like, what exactly did you want here? Did you want him to go to an Oklahoma City situation and spend, I don't know, 3 years in turmoil? Is that, and then you think he would have become a better player because of it? Like, I failed to see the relevance in the argument. It's just one of those, yeah, but he would have had a better career if he ended up in a place where he could basically run things from day one. Is that true? I don't think so. Like, would he have shot the three ball? Would he have passed up dunks? Like, I don't know, but it's conjecture.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I would argue he'd probably be more entitled if he went to a team where he was the clear alpha and they, you know,
yes.
Like, yes. Maybe I would never dispute that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are a perfect fit together. They clearly have fit issues, but like, Simmons' refusal to take accountability for his role in those fit issues, despite Embiid, you know, the comments that he made the other day about how, like, they've been building this team around Ben Simmons for years. Like, he basically was like, I'm the best player, but they're building around him. They got Al Horford. They let go of Jimmy Butler. Both of those decisions were because of him. And he's completely right about that.
Yeah.
Like,
I told you should choose Jimmy. And you were like, no, Ben.
I understand why they made the bet that they did. Given,
I don't. I will never understand it. He was clearly never going to be. Even at that point in time, he hadn't shown offensive growth, Brian.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they were banking on, right? You were banking on, like, you had to weigh Jimmy at the age that he is with the Tibbs miles on his legs and, you know, his cantankerous personality. I'm not saying they chose Brett Brown over Jimmy. I think they chose Ben over Jimmy. So you had to weigh that versus Ben Simmons is younger. And if he hit this theoretical ceiling, you could argue he has a higher ceiling than Jimmy Butler. You can also argue at this point of his career, he's not going to hit that ceiling.
Correct.
He's never going to be as good of a player as Jimmy Butler, it would seem.
But there's another layer to this, which is Joel Embiid like Jimmy Butler. Those two were kind of cut from the same cloth. That matters. That is like a personality thing that should have been taken more into account. You know what? I'm banging on a drum that's like 2.5 years old. I don't know why I keep bothering. But I'm just saying that those two would have been such a perfect duo. Like Jimmy was put in as the third wheel, man. It was always dumb. It was always dumb. Like the moment you got Jimmy is when you should have opened up for Ben trade conversations.
It's a fair point. And I think especially seeing what has unfolded in the 2 years since.
Yeah.
That is one pivot point that I think the Sixers would like to have back. Cause I think, you know, they would agree right now. Like you could have gotten a haul for Ben Simmons at the time. Yeah. Cause like at that point, he had struggled against Boston the year prior. He struggled in the Toronto series as well, but it was like, okay, he's still young. He's still got upside. He's still got time. Put him on a better fit. He'll figure it out. Like now we've seen this become more of a trend. And now you're realizing like, oh, this just isn't going to happen.
Right.
He's just not cut from that cloth that Jimmy Butler or Giannis Antetokounmpo are. Like,
right.
Just does not have the same mentality. And even if he does refine the skills, like that's the skills are only one part of what makes a basketball player great. He does not have the same sort of, you know, like just cutthroat nature that some of the truly great players do.
And it's not just that. It's not just because, look, people will take offense to the cutthroat thing because a lot of people are basically saying you don't need to be cutthroat. You don't need to have 15 guys who are cutthroat, which I agree with. You don't. You need to have a wide mixture of guys. But the issue isn't just that. It's the entitlement. It's the fact that he's coming in and expecting X, Y, and Z without putting in the work. Like, look, Brett Brown asked him to take a three per game. Wasn't that it? Just
one three. He's like,
one three per game.
Tell his agent, tell his family. That was already like a red flag. Like,
right.
Oh boy. And I mean, we've read it in Yaron Weitzman's book. Like,
yeah.
Behind the scenes, they had been, you know, it sounds like they had just bent over backwards for both Embiid and Simmons. Not just Simmons, Embiid and Simmons. And you understand why. I mean, they're the two tent poles of the franchise. They're two high lottery picks. But yeah, it's not like you got to miss me with this excuse in particular. Again, like I would rather just say I'm an anti-vaxxer and like that's why, you know, like this is so egregiously embarrassing coming out of the Simmons camp that I hope it's like I love Kyle and I like hope he's wrong. Like I just hope this report is wrong because if this is really one of the arguments that they've made, like, oh, he went to a team that was too good and he had to play in the playoffs right away. Like, okay, talk to early career Kevin Love. I'm sure he would love to have some conversations about how fun it was to put up 24-12 on a Timberwolves team that did absolutely nothing. Like, he wasted 5 years of his career because he was just in purgatory. Like, Ben Simmons at least has gotten to the playoffs each of the last 4 years and has gotten to experience that high level of competition right away. In theory, that should have propelled his career growth more quickly. It did not.
And this is the crux of the issue here as well. The more that these types of reports come out, and I understand that there are definitely certain agendas working against one another. I mean, we can't ignore that. But it does paint a picture of Simmons, not just the Kyle Newbeck piece, but generally speaking, the quotes over the years, his reluctance to basically be a team player, which sounds ridiculous when he's averaging like almost 8 assists per game for his career. Mm-hmm. But when I say team player, like shooting a three to open up the court for everyone else is also being a team player. But I think ultimately teams have wised up. Otherwise, he would have been gone by now.
Yeah.
Like I think the trade offers that are coming in, I know people are reporting a bunch of them. Some of them we can't even take seriously. But I don't think that the offers are good. I think people are, or GMs around the league are just going, no, we can manage without Ben Simmons because he might raise our floor a little bit, but he also puts a pretty significant ceiling on what we can achieve because he won't shoot the damn basketball.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've continued to say this whole time. He's more valuable to a team like Cleveland, Minnesota, Sacramento, that they're just trying to snap their playoff drought rather than compete for, like, actually build a title contender. Like, you know, every team is going to pretend and say that they want to, but, like, really some teams are just happy 45 wins, first-round playoff exit.
Right.
Put butts in seats, that's fine.
But like, even some of those teams might say no, Brian. Like, honestly. Yeah.
And I don't blame them. Yeah. Like, I mean, the report that came out earlier today was Shams. It was like, you know, the Sixers wanted CJ McCollum and 3 first-round picks and 3 pick swaps. To me, that just says they're not actually trying to trade him yet.
Right.
Because, of course, Portland is going to say no to that. Portland would probably say no to CJ for Ben straight up.
Yeah. But no, Portland would be like, you send us the 3 first.
Right. Right. Exactly. So I think Morey, and I understand at this point, you know, we are a week and a half away from the start of the season. Like, every team right now feels pretty good about itself. Let's see where teams are in a month or 2 months from now. Let's see what injuries mount. You know, knock on wood, no one gets hurt, but that obviously is not going to be the case. Let's see how the early start of the season shakes out. And then some of these teams that enter the year with high expectations or even medium expectations,
right?
You know, maybe it doesn't pan out. And all of a sudden you say like, oh, okay, maybe I'm more willing to make, you know, include an extra first round pick or include an extra prospect that I wasn't willing to before. And from the Sixers side, I think they have to, you know, look at how Tyrese Maxey and Shake Milton, they're really the only 2 point guards. Like, they have Jaden Springer, rookie, 20th pick. He's not going to play that much. So, like, they don't have...
Combo also.
Yeah. So, but they don't have, like, a real point guard. Like, Maxey and Milton are more combo guards who have to...
Well, they didn't have that eaten last year anyway.
Right, that's true. But, you know, like, they have to see how those guys fare in their expanded roles, because if they struggle, then that's going to affect what the Sixers are going to want in return for Simmons. They're going to say, like, we need a primary ball handler. We need Malcolm Brogdon, or we need DeJounte Murray, or we need D'Angelo Russell back. Whereas, like, if Maxey looks really good in the starting lineup, or Milton looks really good, and Maxey's coming off the bench and getting six man of the year buzz, all of a sudden it's like, maybe we don't need a point guard back, and we can, that widens the scope. And, you know, December 15th comes around, and all the guys who signed as free agents this year, they become eligible to be traded. So as much as I want this stupid thing to be over, because I'm sick of talking about it, I think it could go on for, like, at least another month or two, honestly.
Even more than that, honestly.
Yeah, like, it would not surprise me if this thing gets dragged out. Like, I do think he's gone by the deadline. I don't think they can keep him past the
deadline. No, I agree. I think at that point, they're just willing to sell. Very
right.
Like, it's out on the yard sale. Like, this cost $200. I'll give you 50 cents. 150 sold.
Right. I mean, it would be, like, I don't think they're going to do it because they don't want to waste a year of Embiid's prime. But I do find it interesting, at least, that other teams, as you noted, we've seen a couple reports now, that other teams are being supportive of what the Sixers are doing.
Yeah.
Like, and the league office is too, apparently. Kyle's report said the league was wary of players trying to force their way out after signing deals that are explicitly designed to allow teams to hold on to stars they've drafted, especially so as signs of discontent emerge in other situations such as Zion Williamson in New Orleans. And this is what we talked about a couple weeks ago, and I wrote a Forbes piece about this too. It's like, we have to look at the bigger picture of what this means moving forward. Mm-hmm. Because if this works, and if you can you hold out and force a trade with 4 years left on your contract, contracts don't matter anymore. So Zion could take his max extension next summer, play one more year, and then do the exact same thing. Like, the template is here. So I'm just more fascinated beyond, you know, when does Philly trade him? What do they get in return? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, did this actually work? And what's stopping Zion or Luka Doncic or, like, the next disgruntled star with a ton of years left on his contract, what's stopping them from this same power play? And you brought up the CBA earlier. Like, we're probably going to have a new CBA in 2 years.
Yeah.
How does this situation affect that? Like, do players say, hey, we don't want to be under team control of the team that drafted us for 9 years? If we don't think that's fair. Maybe rookie scale extensions only go 3 years instead of five.
And that's the funny thing, right? I brought this up a couple weeks ago. This all started with the owners wanted to save themselves from themselves. Yeah. Remember how players fought to have longer contracts? That's what they wanted. Then owners basically said, no, we can't. We would overpay because we're too stupid to manage money. Oh, okay. Then give them short-term contracts instead. And the players like, nah, that's not great. We don't want long-term contracts. And then suddenly a light bulb went off after a couple of years going, oh, this is better.
Right.
We have more control. And now they're trying to squeeze on that. So this is like the owners once again just failing to look at the long-term view, which is amazing. Yeah. These guys are billionaires. I thought that's supposed to mean you're smart, Brian.
I think we've seen enough poor decisions from NBA teams to know that is not necessarily the case. Well, hopefully we will have a resolution by next episode, but we know that we won't. So until then, please follow us on Twitter.
No. You're not getting off that easy. Uh-oh. Sir, we need to talk basketball because preseason is currently active.
Fair point. Okay.
And I'm going to talk about the Bulls for a minute.
Ah.
It's one preseason game. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that they're going to be successful in the playoffs or in the regular season. Screw all that. But you know what? As someone who watched the Bulls for 22 years, Brian, and was a diehard fan, I mean, both my kids are named after Michael Jordan, for crying out loud. I have not seen a Bulls game that entertaining in over a decade, and that includes the Derrick Rose era.
Wow.
That's a preseason game.
Wow.
I can't even tell you. Like, the result really didn't matter because it's against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Lauri Markkanen and Denzel Valentine got minutes. Like, it doesn't matter. That's not the thing. It was just the cohesiveness, the passing, the unselfishness, the passion. It was extremely enjoyable to watch these Bulls run up and down the court and actually want to share the ball, want to get each other involved, want to put on a show, want to assert themselves. These Bulls of the past decade, and I'm even including the Derrick Rose era because that was still a tips-driven team that was very defense. So aesthetically, it could get bogged down into those, 79-70 scoring games sometimes, which was just such a drag to watch. From a pure entertainment angle, these Bulls are going to be fun. And I understand that there's skepticism out there about the results. Totally hear them. I don't necessarily agree, but like, fair enough if you're skeptical. That's certainly within your right to be that. But one thing I think is not going to be an issue is entertainment factor. They are freaking fun to watch. And I think we need to end it on that note because then we actually got some basketball in there. And I'll say this also. I don't necessarily think their defense will be as bad as people make it out to. Not saying they'll be good, but I think the defensive concerns might have been a bit overstated just watching their schemes.
I was going to say, are you trying to plug our next episode? Because you're doing a very good job of it, if so.
I actually wasn't. But that was just a benefit to it. But I wanted to end on actually talking about basketball because you and I, we love to talk about contracts and summer actions and what goes on in the periphery around the NBA. But now the preseason has started. I've kind of waited a little bit on this. I want to dig into the basketball parts. And I think so far it's been very interesting preseasons. I also like what the Heat are doing. They look really, really solid. Mm-hmm. I think it's shaping up to be a very, very interesting NBA season. Also, just from an on-court perspective, a lot of these teams seem very aligned now in terms of roster construction and roster stability. Like, okay, yeah, you have the Washington Wizards who are still completely overcrowded in the front court right. with all their power forwards. But outside of that, I really like the overall balances of most teams.
Yeah.
Like it seems like GMs are getting it right for the most part. I like that.
Well, we'll talk more about this, I'm sure, yes. in our next episode. We're bringing back the league pass rankings. And for those who listened last year, we will have the same guests on to do it as well. And so far, you and I are usually pretty aligned on these. We have some wild disagreements this year.
Yeah, we do.
And I think it speaks to, you know, kind of the overall quality of the league where mm-hmm. maybe you're right. Like maybe it is just GMs being realistic about where they are as teams. And I think the draft broke exactly right to make all 30 teams interesting. Like there's not a single That's team a in the point. League that I'm not interested to watch. But if Detroit didn't get a top three pick, they would have been really, really low. Love Jeremy Grant, but they would have been,
agreed. Really. But them getting Cade is like oxygen.
Right. And then, you know, Houston with Jalen Green, Orlando with Jalen Suggs. Hell, the Raptors with Scotty Barnes is fun as hell.
Freaking
man.
Amazing, man. Yeah. Did you see that first game? What was the stat line? I don't remember. I don't remember the points, but he had like 9 rebounds and 6 assists. But the way that he scored, what did he get 18 points or something along those lines? I don't remember. He was driving hard to the basket and just jamming on people.
Yeah.
He was picking up offensive rebounds. Like, he was doing everything. And, like, I knew he had the all-around game to him, but the scoring, I did not anticipate. Like, he had a couple pull-up jumpers at the top of the key where I'm like, oh, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. Like, that's interesting. So I am getting ready to eat some crow on Scotty Barnes if he picks up what he's doing and keeps this up. Because, good Lord. Then I completely missed something when I saw him. Not that I said that he was a bad prospect, but I had a lot of guys over him. If he's going to play like this, he's going to give Cade a run for his money.
Yeah, I mean, he is just so energetic defensively, especially. Yeah. Like, I mean, that Raptors team is going to be, they're rebuilding, they're retooling, whatever you want to call it, after losing Kyle Lowry, but having someone like Scotty Barnes and then OG Anunoby, I know we've been plugging him for a while. It's like, this guy has breakout potential.
Mm-hmm.
This might actually be the year.
Yeah, I was skeptical about him being able to create his own offense, but he's actively starting the offense from the wing and then backing people down in the post as well. Like, he's doing a lot of fun stuff right now that I could see transferring into the regular season. You're absolutely right. This league is something. When it comes to the talent level and the skill level, we always spend so much time talking about the business side of it, but just the raw talent and skill, my God, it's unmatched. It's the versatility alone. These guys are just NBA players. Like, they're not positional players necessarily anymore. Guys are just coming out and hooping, and I love every minute of it.
Well, I mean, it speaks to the depth of talent, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I talked the other episode about the BR top 7 or top 50 that we have coming out. Like, we all had to submit lists of top 75, and it was just really hard to whittle down the top 50. Like, there were guys in my 60s and 70s who was like, damn, these are really good players.
Yeah.
I don't remember if Colin Sexton actually even made my top 50. He was close.
Oh,
it was like,
wow.
Right? But it was like, God, I have to squeeze him in here, but I don't, like, who am I going to leave out? But, I think, again, it goes back to, do I think the Houston Rockets are going to make the playoffs? No, but I want to watch Jalen Green. I want to watch Kevin Porter Jr. I want to watch Sengun. I want to watch Christian Wood. There you go. But, like, every single team has at least one or two guys who I'm like, sign me up. I want to sit down and watch what happens with these guys. And there's so many young guys that
Jordan Poole and Golden State also, like, coming out of nowhere, right? Or, well, no, that's not fair. Like, he had some traction last year and the year before, it seems like he's taking a leap. Like, you're right.
Yeah, they've been talking him up a lot.
Yeah.
They said he's going to be a big part of the team. So, yeah, to get back to your point of, you know, we've been talking about, like, everything around the court for a while. Thankfully, basketball is coming back soon, so we'll have, regular season basketball to discuss. So we almost made it through the off season, but yeah,
almost. By the way, I have some bad news. Last episode, I said, "Oh, I'm going to do the crystal meth thing."
Oh no, you didn't.
I didn't because
There's
I just
still
didn't
time. Have
I don't have time. I have a fully big I've read it and I had to grade 450 players.
Yeah,
I don't have time for that. I don't have time. I don't have two. You don't have two kits yet. You have one.
That's true. Yeah.
Just say
he's sleeping well, so I squeezed it in a couple nights where he was already down by seven. But yeah, well, that should be coming out soon as well. But yes, in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. As I mentioned before, our next episode, we will have our League Pass rankings out, and there will be much more disagreement than usual. So, so stay tuned for that. It should be a lot of fun. But until then, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morton Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.